Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, you can hear the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People speaking to us of this year's message for World Tourism Day. The Head of Communications at Caritas Internationale is sharing with us his recent visit to Cambodia. The Director of Asia News speaking to us of the impact on the environment of the Three Gorges Dam in China. And finally, you can hear our popular Latin lover who helps us celebrate our feast day here at Vatican Radio. Well, thanks for joining me and stay tuned as the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People, Archbishop Agostino Marchetto, speaks to us of this year's message for World Tourism Day, which fell on Thursday, 27th of September.
The World Day of Tourism was first held in 1980. Our Pontifical Council has taken part in it from the beginning with a pastoral aim in view. We encourage its celebration in local churches all over the world. The general topic this year is Tourism Opens Doors for Women. In our special message for the occasion, we point out that the sensitiveness of women and their adaptability can find ample expression in tourism at all levels, from humble everyday jobs to high posts of responsibility. In fact, I would add, in the words of our message, that women's gifts of creativity, their inclination towards hospitality, and their ability to be in tune with the thoughts of others help them to have insight into the tastes and aspirations of tourists. The various sectors of the tourist industry, which is constantly evolving, provide employment for over 200 million. This is a real driving power in the economy and a great job provider. This is of particular interest in the case of women because the International Labour Office estimates that more and more women are without work. Then there is another thing we must not forget. Women represent a very high percentage of the poor in this world, and they suffer inequality compared with men, both as regards working conditions and pay. Our council carries out intensive studies about the situation of women affected by human mobility in general. In other sectors, therefore, also, not only in the sector of tourism. And we do all we can to promote their capacities and gifts. At the same time, we are careful to safeguard their dignity, security, and their basic freedoms. I must, however, add that our field of action is essentially pastoral. Certainly, for a woman, employment in the tourist sector means a heavier work burden. A new way, perhaps, of being a mother, and many difficulties that are accentuated by the ebb and flow of tourist traffic, which often means seasonal work with stressful working hours and shifts. We emphasize, however, the pastoral work that is possible for women, and which, in fact, already exists in favor of tourists. We acknowledge this and hope that it will spread.
That was the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People, Archbishop Agostino Marchetto. And now I'd like you to join me as we go east to Cambodia, a nation which 4 years ago was staring in the face of a potentially devastating AIDS epidemic. It had the highest HIV infection rates in Asia. In a population of only 12 million, around 170,000 people were HIV positive. Of those, only 3,000 received the antiretroviral drugs they needed to stay alive. All this in a country that is one of the world's poorest, with a third of the population living on less than a dollar a day. But only 3 years later, there's been a dramatic transformation, thanks mostly to the supply of these free antiretroviral drugs from the Global Fund to Fight AIDS. Caritas Internationalis, the Catholic Church's Aid and Development Confederation, is at the forefront of efforts to assist those living with HIV/AIDS in Cambodia. It provides food, income support, counselling, and helps make sure HIV-positive people get access to the life-saving medicine they need at the government hospitals. Patrick Nicholson is head of communications at Caritas Internationalis and has recently returned from a visit to Cambodia 3 years after an earlier visit to that same country. He spoke to Susie Hodges about the dramatic improvements he saw compared to his previous visit there.
Well, it was amazing, really. When I went, first of all, in 2004, one of the only things that aid workers could do was provide palliative care to people who were dying. That means take them off the streets and provide them with some kind of dignity in which to die, and that seemed very inadequate to me at the time. Whereas now, people are receiving the right drugs, which means that they can extend their lives. So people I met us before, they die now, they're living, they're going back to work, they're seeing their children grow up, they're living normal lives. I mean, some of them say they even forget they have HIV.
Nonetheless, it's still got a very serious AIDS crisis, particularly compared to other Asian nations. So what percentage of the population now does have access to these life-saving antiretroviral drugs?
Well, in theory, it should be 100% access, but because of the hospital system in Cambodia, which is very weak, only 50% currently get access. So, yeah, sure, Cambodia still faces huge challenges. It has the biggest HIV rates in the region. It's a very poor country, so there are enormous obstacles for its long-term development. But on the other hand, it shows what money can do, what giving people the treatment they need can do, really turn a country around from facing further killing fields to one which is now getting back on its feet and its economy can grow and people can live longer lives.
I know that you visited a hospital in the town of Siem Reap and you met several patients and talked to them who were suffering from HIV/AIDS. Can you tell us something about their cases and what they told you?
Well, there were some very, very ill people in this hospital, you know, really, who looked like they were on their last legs, very thin, they had very pallid complexions. They did, you know, they were on drips. Some were even too ill to talk, but the difference was that, you know, for their families who were there, there was a future, that they would receive the antiretroviral drugs that they needed, that they would receive food and proper medicine. And so they had a future because they could see other people in their villages been through the same process and were now living back in their villages. A lot of the people that I met, as a big sex industry in Cambodia, which is very much for Cambodians using it, and a lot of the people I met were sex workers, so really a high risk group of people. But there wasn't really shame attached to the fact that they got HIV. One of the women I remember, her husband, who was HIV negative, he'd sort of forgiven his wife and was, you know, he was really hopeful and optimistic that she could get better and that she, you know, that they could see their child grow up and that they could live, you know, close to a normal family life, which is just an extraordinary change. I mean, in my job, I visited parts of Africa and other parts of Asia where you don't see the same drugs available, and the difference is just startling, because once people have HIV or are tested positive for HIV, chances are you know, they're going to die very quickly. And so it's really revolutionary almost to be able to prolong someone's life.
So HIV transmission is declining, but it's still the worst in the region. Why did it get so bad in Cambodia?
I think because Cambodia was coming out of 20 years of civil war, which completely destroyed its infrastructure. Cambodia is the poorest country in the region, one of the poorest countries in the world. It does have some behavioural activities. Cambodians do have some behavioural activities like the use of sex workers, all of which contributed to the fact that HIV could spread so quickly. People weren't able to go to hospitals to get testing. There was very little education, and the use of sex workers meant that HIV spread at a very quick rate, and there wasn't the infrastructure, the health infrastructure, to cope with that.
What about AIDS orphans? Because back in 2003, people there were predicting a sort of tidal wave of AIDS orphans because the epidemic was spreading so rapidly.
That's right. People were predicting 200,000 new AIDS orphans then, 15,000 of which would be HIV positive. That never happened because of the drugs program, which meant that parents were living longer and so watching their children grow up. So instead of going to institutional care, these children stayed with their families, which is the best place for them.
Now, how does Caritas work fit into this picture? What specific help is Caritas providing?
Well, Caritas is very much a grassroots organisation, so it's really within the community. And what it, because of that fact, it's the first point of contact for many people who believe they may have got HIV and AIDS to come to. And Caritas will provide them with testing. If they prove positive, it will provide them with food, with some financial support in terms of supporting kind of microfinance projects like chicken rearing, that sort of thing. And it will also take them to hospitals and make sure that they're on the right drugs programs for their level of illness. And then once they're on those programs, it will make sure that they keep taking those drugs, and it will monitor their health and provide them with education, and also with help in coping with some of the stigma attached to HIV and AIDS. It runs workshops in some of its centres where people come in and they share their experiences, and so it lessens the stigma that's sometimes associated with the virus.
Is the stigma, though, still quite strong in Cambodian society?
According to the Cambodians that I talk to, no. I think the reason is because people aren't dying, and if you have people dying, then there is that strong stigma. Because of the education campaign and because of the improvements it's made on in terms of healthcare, that stigma has, to a large extent, has subsided.
But presumably when it comes to getting access to the antiretroviral drugs, you need to go to a hospital for that. How do people manage who live in remote areas? You know, how do they manage to get to the hospital? Do they have to travel long distances to go there?
That's one of the real problems. Only 1 in 100 Cambodians ever see the inside of a government hospital. So healthcare is really scarce on the ground. And many people are too poor to afford the transportation into the hospitals. And once they get there, antiretroviral drug treatment is a constant month-by-month thing. So, you know, where do they live? They can't afford to go back and forth. So that's one of the real issues that Caritas and other aid agencies are facing, how to solve this transportation problem.
In fact, you say that some of the people you met who were coping with this problem, you said there was a case of a widow with 8 kids who was living near the hospital but risked being evicted.
Yeah, exactly. One of the women I met, she had 8 children. She had a rented place near the hospital, but the landlord wanted to move her out. Siem Reap is a really developing very quickly because of its tourist potential. And so she was being moved off. She had no idea where she was going to go to next. She couldn't return to the countryside because that would have meant her not being able to take the drugs she needed. So she had no idea of the future. So there are still lots of dramatic stories of people who are in danger and are in trouble. But I still think that when you look at the picture that I saw 3 years ago to today, it really has changed enormously.
And where's the money coming from for these antiretroviral drugs?
It's the Global Fund for HIV and AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria, which was set up under the auspices of the UN, and that provides the funding for Cambodia's antiretroviral treatment. It was identified by the World Health Organization, the UN's health arm, as a target country, but the money is not there forever. So the thing we need to do now is secure long-term financing.
Because if that money were to dry up, then an awful lot of people would die needlessly.
Absolutely. I mean, there are other things you could look at with how that money is spent as well. I mean, that money is one of the issues that Caritas, as a Catholic aid agency, ponders, is that the Global Fund for HIV, most of it is spent through secular institutions. Only 2% of it reaches Catholic aid agencies and the Catholic Church, despite the fact that Catholic aid agencies provide 25% of the care. So that's a real issue for us, how that money is spent and could it be spent more effectively.
As I said earlier, you met and talked to a number of patients or their relatives. Is there any one particular case that stays in your mind because it symbolises, shall we say, the dramatic improvements for people suffering from AIDS in this country?
Yeah, there was. This young girl I met called Kim Hang, I mean, it was a terrifying story in a way. She'd been sold by her family into sex work at the age of 5. Her parents had died and her extended family had sold her in there. So she worked as a prostitute until she was 20. And when she contracted HIV, became too ill to work, so the brothel kicked her out. And when Caritas found her, she literally was almost mentally insane. She couldn't talk, she couldn't communicate, she couldn't wash herself. She was extremely ill, very thin. Anyway, they took her in, they made sure she was on the right drug therapy. And, you know, over a very short period of time, she began to speak again. She began to engage with the community and she began to take part in life again. And now she's, you know, leading workshops, talking about her experiences, which is a great story of change from someone who was really as good as dead.
You've just been listening to the head of communications at Caritas Internationalis, Patrick Nicholson, speaking there to Susie Hodges. And now why not go to China with the director of Asian News, Pime missionary father Bernardo Cervellera, who speaks to Chris Altieri about the impact on the environment of the Three Gorges Dam.
The alarm was sounded by a series of not only scientists but also officials in the Chinese government about the possible environmental costs of this enormous hydroelectric project, the Three Gorges Dam, which is actually a series of dams, and that was designed in order to meet China's energy needs in an environmentally responsible way. Can you talk to us a little bit about the project and the problems facing the project?
The project was stressed and pushed for many, many years because the Chinese people, they wanted to, I would say that the Chinese Communist Party wanted to, first of all, guarantee the energy with this hydroelectric project, but also to stop the floods of the Yangtze River, the Changjiang River, which every day inundates a lot of fields in China, in central China. They wanted that this project would be the greatest and the biggest and a kind of a victory of a human being in front of the nature. Many environmentalists, they warned the government, the Chinese government, about the problems, And the Chinese government was deaf to this, to these warnings. Now, the point is that scientists and the same administrations of the dam, they are warning about these environmentalist problems, because there are possibilities of landslides into the basin of the dam, and this produces waves 10, 12 meters high. And because there are people living around the dam, it is possible that these waves can overcome them. Then there are landslides also for the people who have been transferred from the lower side of the dam to the upper river. And for these people also there are problems, because the land is not very stable, and also the land is, is not enough for them to earn some food. This is also another problem. I would stress also one more problem. It has been discovered that the dam, of course, stops the limus, which the Yangtze produces. So all the land down the dam, the Three Gorges Dam, is becoming more and more impoverished, and so the agriculture is failing.
And I heard some interesting things that I don't understand, because I'm just not a trained scientist, but one of the things that I read was that the dam is creating methane emissions that would actually offset any environmental gains, because, of course, methane is it's a hydrocarbon and greenhouse gas.
The dam has been built in order to produce 84 million of kilowatt, but this is just 3 or 5% of the need for energy by China. So this means that because China, for their energy needs, use a lot of carbon and coal, so this means that this little 5% is not enough to clean the atmosphere, and so it is not enough also to make a betterment of the environmental situation in China.
You were listening there to the director of Asia News, PMA missionary father Bernardo Cervellera, speaking to Chris Altieri. And finally, time to celebrate our feast day here at Vatican Radio, which falls this Saturday, to coincide with the feast of Saint Gabriel, patron saint of communications. Brace yourself for the change of pace. Our radio station was founded by Pius XI on the 12th of February 1931. I had a little bit of trouble finding the Pope's first speech on our radio station, which was in Latin, the Latin version. Not in sound, but in the actual text itself. What I found really interesting about this speech is how it's divided into categories. Basically, the Pope is speaking to all kinds of different categories. He starts by addressing creation, no?
Yeah.
He says,
Deus Christus imperat, which is still, you know, the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the first words that were transmitted.
Christus vincit, Christus regnat.
Christus imperat. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This was when talks were for a wireless. And how do you translate the word wireless?
Sine filis.
So why do we call it radio then?
Well, radiare is to, like, on the spokes of a wheel. You know, that's radiare. Radii are the spokes of a wheel. So to send out a message like the spokes on a wheel is to radiate. It's all Latin.
The text of the first radio message, I've been told, was written in Latin by Pope Pius XI himself. Is that possible, do you think?
Oh, yeah, certainly.
And he said, "Listen, O heavens, to that which I say. Listen, O earth, listen to the words which come from my mouth." Is that what he said?
Where the heavens? Audite hic omnes gentes, all you people, listen to these things. With ears, perceive all of you people who are dwelling on this earth. Together, all together, the rich and the poor. May you and the islands hear, and people pay attention from far away. Oh, it's glorious. I know where you got the heavens from, but that's all right.
The passage we always hear, and when we use the first broadcast, we always use the first words, qui arcano de consilio.
Mm.
What does all that mean? Qui arcano de
consilio? We who by a secret plan of God, Sergedimus,
in loco,
follow up in the place of the Prince of the Apostles. Got the idea?
Yeah. Eorum nempe quorum doctrina.
Okay. Namely, of those apostles whose teaching and preaching by divine command has been destined to all peoples and to all creation. Oh, it's glorious.
So,
and we who are...
Et predicatio, so we said, eorum nempe quorum doctrina.
Yes, and of those people, namely, whose teaching and preaching...
Et by predicatio.
By divine command, iussu divino, destinata est, has been destined to all peoples and to all creation.
Ad omnes gentes et ad omnem creaturam.
Oh... And look at him, he's going on with the radio. And we who first, in the very place, are able to enjoy Ope, okay, Mira Sane Ope Marconiana. And by this marvelous Marconian help. That's the radio.
Yeah. Where is help? Which word is
Well, ope, with the resources of the radio.
Ad omnia et ad omnes primo nos convert.
Okay, we turn ourselves to all things and to all people first. Hic et infra, here and below, I don't know, the sacred text helping us. We say, here you are, oh, heavens, listen to the things which I say, and let the earth hear the words of my mouth.
Mm.
Oh, glorious.
How does this Latin compare to today's Latin?
This is much better than ours.
You wouldn't translate like this, would you?
No, because he wrote in Latin. Now we're translating. We are translating from another language into Latin, and this is artificial. This is real.
The Pope Pius XI speaks about the Ope Marconiana, the work of Marconi, in other words, the radio.
Yes.
Marconi spoke in Italian.
Yes. But he says, we are able to enjoy and to use, of course, the marvelous help of Marconi.
Mm. Because Marconi spoke before the Pope, no? And he said...
I don't know the story, really.
He said, I have the highest honour of announcing that in only a matter of seconds the Supreme Pontiff, Pope Pius XI, will inaugurate the radio station of the Vatican City State.
Oh, how exciting.
The electric radio waves will transport to all the world his words of peace and blessing.
Marvellous. Good.
How do you say all that in Latin?
Mi sumo honori est... Annunciare, paucissimis omnino momentis, pontificem supremum, pium undecimum, inauguraturum esse, stationem radiofonicam, urbis Vaticane. It's glorious.
A huge thank you there to our popular Latin lover, his Carmelite father, Reginald Foster, Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org.
Laudator Jesus Christus.